Blog Talk Radio.
Sarkozy, who couldn't find himself
couldn't fight his way out of a wet paper bag, but yet this scumbag, you know, feels it necessary to go ahead for his own little imperialistic and self-interest wet dreams, you know, push for this, push for, you know, France's involvement in this imperialist war, raining bombs all over, throughout Libya. And, you know, what's not being shown in the U.S. corporate media is the civilian casualties have already begun rolling in. I was watching Russia Today this morning, and they had some of the first images. And, you know, I saw this village, you know, this town that was just decimated, rubble everywhere. And you saw this little girl, probably about, I don't know, she looked like she was maybe about 7, 8 years old, maybe, being pulled out of the rubble onto a gurney, bloodied up. I don't know if she was alive. I don't know what her status is, but there have been dozens of civilian casualties caused by these tomahawk missiles being dropped, you know, being dropped by these F-16, you know, fighter jets. And we'll get into the cost. Peter and I are going to get into the cost, the actual monetary cost. If that's what you measure things on, but the cost of life is the most important thing, and we're going to get into that, and then we're going to get into the cost and the hypocrisy. This is not a humanitarian war. This is not a humanitarian mission. The way the U.S. media and their government, fornicators want to continue to sell it as, whether it's Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama. You know, I don't care who it is, you know, any of those folks who are selling this as some kind of humanitarian war. Humanitarian war? What the hell is a humanitarian war? A humanitarian war. So I don't care what they sell it as. You know, you'd be one of the mindless, tens of millions of mindless sheeple in this U.S. that continues to suck up whatever is being fed to you by the corporate media, then you'll buy that. You'll buy that this is some kind of humanitarian mission. You won't see past the hypocritical veneer that is laid right in front of your face, right in front of your face, right in front of your mind's eye to catch it. But they know that you can't catch it because you've been systematically deprogrammed and systematically dumbed down from an inferior and a failed school system that you know, I guess it's not a failure because its motives are to put out as many critically thinking Americans as possible, you almost have to, I don't know, it's infuriating. Yet another war. So here we are, March 24th. Here I am, Solomon, about to be joined by Peter Fowler from Arizona. From the desert heat of Arizona. And this is Your World News. This has always been Your World News. And this is your platform. This is community radio coming to you via the waves of the internet. This is Your World News. And we lay it down. We always lay it down straight with no chaser. You like the alcohol analogies, whatever, you know, we lay it down straight with no chaser. And we're going to get right into it today. So, you know, without further ado, I'm about to introduce my co-pilot, Peter Fowler. We do this not for the money. We do this because, you know, and little of us, we can't expect to combat with the powerful corporate media. But you know what? For the folks that tune in each week to listen to us and then those folks who decide to take the initiative and send the links out off to your networks and your comrades, you know, bless you, thank you. I say bless you and thank you because you're adding to generating a larger social critical consciousness. Not for us, as you know, we don't have any endorsements from Nike or Ciroc or anything like that to have this show. So we're not getting any corporate kickbacks, you know. We're doing this for you. Matter of fact, we're paying a little bit of money to have the space that we have here. And we're paying a little money because, and why we do it, you know, for nothing in return. We do it because, you know, it's important for us to educate the community, even if it's one person, even if it's a few hundred people, even if it's a few thousand people, compared to the tens of millions that watch the corporate media. As we know from history, it was told us that some of the great movements it's only been a critical mass that has stepped up and taken the mantle and demanded social change and demanded and broke through the stones of injustice and created social change. So we're just trying to do what we can in solidarity with all of you. You know, we want to stand side by side you on the front lines, and that's what Your World News is about. All right, we're not some fly-by-night social activists that, you know, I know they're out there. Maybe there's someone listening right now, those social activists that, you know, when it comes time to build with Peter and myself, and we put out the olive branches, and those folks don't take the bites because they want to be the only social activist to be talking about hip-hop in the media. They want to be the only ones to be doing this or the only ones to be doing that. You know, it's I laugh at that. It's a crying shame. But those of you guys that understand it, you know, you put the egos aside. It's about building with one another and trying to develop deeper inroads. You know, you know, I hope that I would love it if we had thousands of these kind of independent, you know, podcasts all over the place. It's not about competition. If you really in this game, you know, to make social change, it's not about who's the first, who's the biggest, who's the baddest. It's about building a movement with other folks and helping other folks develop freedom of expression and a space and agency where they can develop a broader scope. Isn't that right, Peter? You know about those fly by night social activists, the ones that you've tried to build with in the past, and you try to send the email out, Peter, and say, hey, I'd like to, you know, like to help out. They don't return the emails, but you know, because they, you know, and you know they get them. You know they get them, Peter. But you know, you know what I'm talking about, Peter. They're all out there.
Hey, bro, definitely. You know, we've talked about that in terms of you know, the opportunism. The way you mentioned it, you know, some folks want to have the limelight, they want to have the glory, they need to have the be on the front page and be out there, be out on front street and have their name being dropped, and you know, it's that all about me kind of mentality, and you know, and then you also have folks who just are seem to be unable, incapable, or simply unwilling to adopt a political consciousness where they make political decisions based on political consciousness. You know, this is the kind of thing that cannot be ignored when one has a political consciousness and what, you know, making decisions as to whether I'm going to get involved in the critical dialogue and the critical analysis and deconstruction of, for example, what's going on with this madness that's going on in Libya or other issues, you know, whether it's the immigration madness that's going on out here in the Southwest or the ongoing wars. All these important, crucial political issues demand a political consciousness, and yet still most Americans were socialized to be apolitical or non-political, and so, you know, we don't make decisions based on a political consciousness. So what ends up happening is folks just, you know, they say, well, you know, my game's on tonight, right? You know, my team's still in the, you know, I still got my bracket, right? You know, my team's in the sweet 16, right? You know, so you know, unfortunately, you know, and it's easy to knock folks like that, but if we think structurally and we understand that that's how we're socialized and that's the way we're brainwashed in this culture, is to be apolitical, to not be political actors, to not think structurally. And so, you know, people don't do that. And so, you know, they don't respond to things and they don't organize. And then oftentimes, like you said, when folks do, they do it for the wrong reasons. But you know, this show is about trying to establish political consciousness. And you know, and so that's what this is about. is looking at what's going on in Libya, and, you know, why are we so outraged, right? Why are we so outraged what's happening on the other side of the world? Well, we don't think about it like that, right, Solomon? I mean, we don't think about the people over there as being different from us. You know, there's solidarity, right? Solidarity is a cornerstone of the struggle, and that's the struggle for liberation. That's the struggle for justice. That's the struggle for human dignity, and we all have to be linked together, hand in hand, arm in arm, and by any means necessary, right? And that demands a political consciousness to think about, you know, what's happening to the Libyan people, what's happening to the Afghan people, what's happening to the Iraqi people, and to the people who are the victims of American genocidal militarism all over the globe, and not just in distant places, but right here in my backyard, Solomon, right here in the Phoenix area. There are the ramifications from the drug war that's just a few miles away, a couple hours away, along the Mexican border, and so it's in our backyards, whether we want it to be or not. And so that right. demands a political consciousness. And so you know, I'm you know, it's exciting to be able to have this dialogue, have this discussion. You know, and I hope we have folks to call in and join the discussion. I hope folks are gonna share this link and send it out there and talk to people about this, generate conversations to begin to think structurally, to begin to think politically, and to begin to think about solidarity, particularly with tonight's subject being in solidarity with the Libyan people, being in solidarity with African people, because that's one of the things that's at the core of this, and I know we'll get into that as the show goes on. But, you know, but one of the things that's unique about the Libyan situation that's different and distinct from what's going on in Afghanistan and Iraq, some of those things, that this is an African country. Libya is an African country. You know, I was talking about...
You mean it's not the Middle East?
Well, you know what, Solomon? Okay, all joking aside, you know, as Egyptology became a science in the 19th century, there were scholars, so-called scholars. It's hard to think of them as scholars when they come up with crackpot ideas. But there were, you know, some of the leading scholars of the 19th and early 20th centuries. They drew lines across the other half of the globe. In other words, Europe, Asia, Africa, and literally included Egypt, Libya, Algeria, Tunisia, Morocco, those North African countries. They were considered to be the part of Mediterranean Europe. That's how they were officially classified in many textbooks and among many scholars, with Mediterranean Europe. So in other words, the whole world was defined by Europe and its relationship to Europe. There was Northern Europe, there was Central Europe, and then there was the Mediterranean Europe, which included, I mean, ridiculously, included African countries. So yeah, you know, we need to be real clear about that we're talking about Africa here. We're talking about an African country and all of the unique qualities and aspects that fact brings to this conversation. Again, that's distinct from what's going on in Afghanistan and Iraq, and what's going on in Colombia, what's going on in Mexico. And so we'll touch on that tonight. And why that is so important, because it really is. It's not just the fact, that there's oil there and resources. Obviously, those are crucial ideas and factors into what's going on. But it's Africanness of Libya, as well as the Africanness and the African orientation of Muammar Gaddafi. So we need to understand all of those things. Thinking politically, thinking structurally, and only then can we move ahead. So, having said that, let's do it. Let's move ahead. Let's break this thing down, bro.
Yeah, and since you said Africanness, and thanks for that historical perspective, because you know, folks, that was I'm glad you brought that up, because people need to understand the only reason why like, you know, the Middle East, if you want to look at, you know, Palestine and Israel and Syria and that part of the Middle East, the only reason why it's called the Middle East is because Europeans placed themselves in the center of the world, of the globe.
Right.
So you think about it, the globe, you know what I'm saying? So it was them that said, oh, we're going to place us in the center of the globe. And so this is going to be called the Middle East. And this is going to be called, you know, so I'm glad you brought that out, because that's the only reason why, you know. But when you look at, you know, other, like, you know, more grounded scholars who haven't bought into that, you know, like John Henry Clark and other folks, you know, they would say the so-called Middle East, or they would call, you know, call that region, you know, West Asia or something like that. But you know, so, you know, I'm glad that you brought that up. And since you said the Africanness, me trying to invoke the MC in me, I'm going to play this clip by Farrakhan, and I want us to, because he brings up some very salient and relevant points, and, you know, and let's, Peter, you and I, you know, deconstruct, you know, what he brings up, what he puts forth in this brief clip that we're about to play, this, you know, radio interview that he did recently on the current imperialist war in Libya.
You told the president, you said, be prepared because it will be coming to your shores, America, to your door, you said. And your advice to Obama was to remember the words you're making to other nations.
Well, today, our dear brother, you know, has to be very, very careful in this decision that he and his Secretary of State and Sarkozy and Prime Minister Cameron and others are planning. They would love to go into Libya and kill Brother Gaddafi and kill his children, as they did with Saddam Hussein and his sons, Qusay and Uday. You must remember, dear people of America, that whenever government wants you to think and act in a certain way that would bring justification to an action that they are already planning to make, they must make the person that they hate a boogeyman. Now, nobody wants civil war. It is the bloodiest of all kinds of wars, because you're fighting your own brothers. You're fighting the people of your own language and culture and history. So in every nation, brothers and sisters, there is dissatisfaction. And what the CIA does is go into a country and move among the people that are dissatisfied to stimulate a revolt against a leader that they don't like, because they want regime change. I want to be specific. When George W. Bush was president, he said they wanted regime change in Iran, in Korea. Regime change. How do you get regime change, honest America? How do you do that? Congress, the Congress of the United States, voted to spend $150 million to replace the government in Iran that America doesn't like. So they send their agents in to work among the dissatisfied. So when they had this election and the people in Iran rose up, they have legitimate grievances, all right, but stimulated from the outside. So President Obama didn't want to put his foot into that cage, lest somebody say America inspired it, because it was America's policy to destabilize that government. Well, what about Libya?
Libya.
See, how much money is being spent to arm the so-called rebels? They're dissatisfied. Well, what is their dissatisfaction about? Do they have jobs? Yes. Do they have food? Yes. Has Gaddafi used the oil money to build Libya? Yes. Did Gaddafi use oil money and discover water under the the Sahara Desert and brought that water to the surface and brought water from Benghazi all the way to the border almost of Tunisia? Did he impose farming in the desert so that they could feed their own people? Yes. Are there billions of dollars that he's spending building homes, building apartments for his people? Yes. So something is under this. And so when America, England, France, three imperialist powers want to destabilize that country, is it that you're so concerned? Now listen to this hypocrisy, American people. Is it that you're so concerned over the blood that is being shed in Libya when you look the other way when the Israeli Defense Force was bombing the innocent people of Gaza? Unarmed men, women, and children, but our government looked the other way. You looked the other way when the Israeli Defense Force went into Lebanon thinking that they were going to have an easy victory. Then you had to come out with your tail between your legs. Don't tell me and wise black people or white people that you're interested in black suffering. Where were you in Rwanda? Where are you in the Congo? Why did you go to Darfur? Because oil is there. No, you don't want to save the Libyan people. That's your noble motive to hide your wicked agenda. Now, I want to warn you in the name of Allah that this is more complex than what you think. Go into Libya if you want to. The Libyans do not want foreign occupation on their land. And when you make that kind of move, if you're not careful, you'll unite the Libyan people against you. And again, Gaddafi wasn't sitting in any tent twiddling his thumbs over these last 10 years. This man has been investing in African development. This man has been moving throughout Africa. This man has friends all over the world. He may not be your friend, but if you take him out and kill him like he's some rotten fella that wants to kill his own people, what did you do in Waco? What did you do when your people rose up? Did you talk them out of it? No. They had weapons, you bombed them. What did you do in Philadelphia with the MOVE movement? Did you talk them out of their home or did you bomb them? We didn't hear any outcry from you religious hypocrites that love the lives of human beings. You're a liar and a hypocrite. And I warn my brother, don't you let these wicked demons move you in a direction that will absolutely ruin your future with your people in Africa and throughout the world. They don't like the way you handle Mubarak. They don't like the way you're handling the situation in the Arab world. So I would advise you to be careful and move with wisdom and skill. My advice would be, why don't you organize a group of respected Americans and ask for a meeting with Gaddafi? You can't order him to step down and get out. Who the hell do you think you are? That you can talk to a man that built a country over 42 years and ask him step down and get out? Can anybody ask you? Well, there's a lot now going to ask you to step out of the White House because they don't want no black face in the White House. Be careful, brother, how you handle this situation, because it is coming to America. It has already started. Look in Wisconsin. Look in Ohio. Look at what's going on in your country, and remember your words, because the American people are rising against their own government. It's not Muslims. It's not black people. It's white militia that are angry with their government, and they are well-armed. Are you going to tell them, put your arms down and let's talk it over peacefully? I hope so. But if not, America will be bathed in blood, not because Farrakhan said so, but because the dissatisfaction in America has reached the boiling point. Be careful how you manipulate the dissatisfaction in Libya and other parts of the Muslim world.
The Honorable Minister, Louis Farrakhan.
More intelligent conversation.
Peter Fowler. Oh, Peter. Wow. Farrakhan just has a way of putting things in perspective, and it's not a coincidence, folks, that you don't hear that perspective from him or other folks on corporate media. They're not invited onto the blowhard Chris Matthews hardball show. They're not invited to come on CNN and talk with Anderson Cooper. They're not invited to come on ABC's Nightline. They're not invited to come on the white supremacist Fox News. Of course not, because that might make people think a little bit too much and actually might put people in a position where they must step outside of that manufactured box that these governmentally sanctioned public schools have created for them, and they have to step outside and think, like, damn. You know what? When I look at Israel and I look at what's going on in Gaza Strip and, you know, what is known as the largest open-air prison, I look at West Bank, and when I look at what's going on in East Jerusalem to Palestinians, to Arab Palestinians, whether they may be Muslim or Christian, you know what I'm saying? I look what's happening to them and how they are being persecuted, how they are being slaughtered. We just have to go back a couple years to Operation Cast Lead that, you know, dropped 1,300 to 1,400 Palestinians, and over half of them were children under the age of 16, women and children. You know, I didn't see the U.S. government come in there and impose the no-fly zone, Peter, where those bombs were being dropped by U.S. manufactured warplanes that were financed by the U.S. government at the tune of $3+ billion a year, people. Yes, I said $3 billion a year. The U.S. finances the Israel Defense Forces, their military. I'm not talking about, and it's specifically earmarked for military. And so you didn't see the U.S. say a damn thing when they indiscriminately use disproportionate force on Palestinians. Nowhere, because this government is a hypocrisy. It is a hypocrisy. And if you take off the blinders, people, if you take off the damn blinders that have been provided for you, have been given and provided to you by yours truly, the U.S. government, you know what I'm saying? If you take off the damn glasses, you'll see a panoramic view about things that you cannot ignore. You cannot ignore. Even if you have a rotten soul and you have a black heart, you can still not ignore them. You can justify them. You might justify them, your SOB. You might justify them, but you can't ignore them. You can't ignore them because the hypocrisies are as bright as day. These people have been slaughtered for decades. And if we just even just look back a couple years and see what's happening, if the U.S. was really about humanitarian missions, then Senator Obama wouldn't have been beating his chest and supporting what happened, and President Obama wouldn't have taken such a laissez-faire approach. So you see the little laissez-faire poster, Peter? And I was just talking to him. You know, Peter, you know, when it comes to Israel bombing and destroying human beings, destroying civilian human beings, you know, what does Obama do and the U.S. government do, Peter? What they do is say, hey, let's have some talks. Let's have some talks, man. Let's bring the people to the table. Let's have some talks. Let's have some talks. Let's send George Mitchell, who was the U.S. envoy to that region. Let's send him out there. Have some talks, man. While the people are getting slaughtered. But here, Peter. Did, as Farrakhan said, did he send somebody over there, some respected U.S. officials over there to have some talks? put Gaddafi and the rebel forces, the so-called rebel forces, and we still don't know who these rebel forces are and how they're getting some of their munitions, but that's another story. But they didn't send any folks over there and say, let's have some talks, Peter. None of that, Peter. They said, you know what we're going to do, you little brown nation? We're going to take some bombs, and we're going to take U.S. taxpayer dollars, and we're going to bomb. We're going to drop them, and understand this. Understand this. There ain't no humanitarian war, and there ain't nothing considered a smart bomb because these bombs are indiscriminate. And if you are a civilian and you are in the area where they think that their so-called targets are, you are now their target. And soon you are no more, and you are no more. And you are certainly not being remembered by the vast majority of citizens in the U.S. in the United States of America, and certainly not by the majority of clowns that occupy both sides of Congress.
Right.
What about that, Peter?
Man, you know, let's just talk about talks first. Let's just talk about talks. You know, you mentioned the lack of any kind of diplomatic negotiations. You know, first of all, you know, Farrakhan said it so well. Who the hell do you think you are, the United States of America? Who the hell do you think you are? This is nothing but, to quote him, a wicked agenda, and you, the U.S., are a liar. You are a liar. I mean, think about that. Think about that. The head of state in this country, along with all of the other elected officials, save maybe one or two here and there, have been clamoring for the president. The president has to take a firm stand and tell Gaddafi to step down. Who the hell do these people think they are, Solomon, that they can tell the head of state of a sovereign nation to step down because they don't like him? Who the hell do they think they are? And the talks, you know, they don't want to talk to Gaddafi. They don't want to talk to Gaddafi because it's not about a peaceful resolution to some conflict. They have their own end game in mind. You know, war has a logic all of its own, and it's not any kind of logic at all. And so, you know, their lack of any kind of humane and diplomatic approach to what they profess to be their concern, the health and well-being of these innocent civilians, right? No, they don't take that approach. But let's look at when proposals for talks were on the table. Let's go back to 2003. Saddam Hussein went to the United States and he said, come on in and check for weapons of mass destruction. You come on in and check. And they did. There was none. Iraq made every attempt to negotiate with the United States so as not to bring on warfare. The United States would have nothing to do with it, absolutely nothing to do with it. And we see that in case after case after case where the United States just outright rejects any offers or invitations to negotiate, to sit down at a table and talk when its interests are in mind, or they just go right ahead and start bombing. And so I want to quote another powerful man, Hugo Chavez, when the bombing was imminent. Chavez said, "We know what's going to happen. Bombs, war, more suffering for the people, and more death." He said, "More death, more war. The United States is the masters of war." And so that's what we're seeing. You know, we are seeing that the United States isn't about negotiating for some humane purposes. No, they are viciously, savagely, and wrongfully attacking a sovereign nation simply because they are in disagreement with Gaddafi's policies, his politics, which are as Minister Farrakhan broke down, you know, they are pro-African, they're pro-Libyan, and if you look at the attitude towards Gaddafi throughout most of Africa, it's positive. A lot of people don't understand that because we're so West toxicated. I love that term. That we're West toxicated. We're intoxicated by the Western media. We're intoxicated to the point of stupor by this scandal that's called public education in this country, and so many other ways that we're socialized to believe the lies, the dominant narratives that are put forth. And since 1970, one of those major narratives and those most just heinous of lies is that, you know, Muammar Gaddafi is an evil dictator, that he's a world-class terrorist, when in fact none of that is true. When in fact none of that is true. You know, you mentioned at the top of the show you were viewing Russia TV. Well, why I just can't watch Russian TV, a lot of people might be asking. Well, we need to see and hear attitudes and perspectives and ideas that are non-Western, that are non-United States, or they haven't been West intoxicated. They're not intoxicated with the propaganda, the hypocrisy, and the lies of the Western media, the corporate media. And so we look around the world. Like Minister Farrakhan said, Gaddafi has friends all over the world. And friends in high places, you know, other heads of state, powerful people, Nelson Mandela, Hugo Chavez, Evo Morales, you know, the list goes on and on. And we see the utter hypocrisy. We see that America simply wants to go after what she thinks belongs to her in the first place. And again, that type of arrogance is, there's just not a word for that type of hubris, for that kind of chutzpah. Maybe there is a word for it. It's called white supremacy. And that brings me to one of the other ironies of this situation, Solomon. One of the other ironies of the white supremacist mindset and ideology that we're seeing get played out, unfortunately, the script written in the blood of innocent people all over the world. But one of the tragic ironies of this system is that we now have an African American president, right? And that African American president is presiding over the bombing of Africa. And not only the president, but Susan Rice, and there's a number of other brown-skinned people in high levels of the government and the corporate apparatus that are pushing for and supporting this barbaric war and the continuation of genocidal imperialist policies that will continue, as Hugo Chavez said, to bring more death and more destruction and more misery to the people. For what? For what? To fatten the bank accounts of the global elite, of the global economists, and of course some of the rhetoric, okay, some of the rhetoric you mentioned at the top of the show, the nonsense of thinking of a humanitarian war, right, the humanitarian intervention, which is absolute nonsense. We need to reject that kind of language entirely, categorically reject that kind of nonsense. And one of the other nonsensical and ridiculous names that we need to reject is the so-called Department of Defense, right? Not the Department of Defense. What was it prior to 1945 or the end of the Second World War? They called it by what it really was. It was the Department of War. It was the Department of War. So we need to be honest with ourselves about what's really going on here. This is the Department of War doing what it does best, prosecute wars, to go after resources and to go after people who disagree with the United States and won't bow down and kiss the United States' ass. So that's what we see going on here, and we hear in the voice of Minister Farrakhan this scathing critique and deconstruction of what's really going on. And some other language that we have to understand, we must understand, is something that Farrakhan mentioned, the concept of regime change. And again, that goes back to, who the hell do you think you are, Uncle Sam, that you can just dictate and order a regime change in whatever country you think needs it? We need to dismiss that. Let's not even use the language. We've talked about on this show before not using the language of illegal aliens, for example. And people ain't illegal, and they ain't aliens, you know? And so we need to reject that kind of language. We need to look past it. We need to understand the hypocrisy. And like Minister Farrakhan said, let's just look at the facts. Just look at the facts. Look what's really going on. And some of those facts include what I mentioned a moment ago, the offer for talks, the offer for negotiation. What did the Taliban say when they were in power in Afghanistan back in 2001 when the United States said, we demand that you turn over Osama bin Laden? What was the Taliban's response? They said, okay, no problem. Just show us some evidence that he's responsible for the destruction of these events that happened on September 11th, 2001. Well, show us some evidence. That's all we want. That's reasonable, isn't it? Show us some evidence. They said, no, we're not showing you no evidence at all. We don't want to talk. We don't want a discussion. Hand him over. Well, they knew that wasn't going to happen. They asked him something that couldn't possibly have been responded to, and so the war commenced. In other words, forget talking. We're just going to bomb you. We're just going to fight. That's what we want: more blood, more destruction, more death. And let me wrap my comments up on that note. Death, destruction, bloodshed, more war, more war, more war. I can't think of a time, certainly not in my lifetime, and I can't think of a time in U.S. history, and I think I know a little bit, just a little bit about history, but the United States is now engaged in three hot wars, three separate hot wars. One's been going on since the end of 2001, another since the beginning of 2003, and now, the beginning of 2011, a third hot war. And there's still war rumors of more war about attacking Iran. We actually have acts of war being perpetrated by the United States government in Pakistan and even some in Yemen. So we have multiple hot wars being executed by the United States simultaneously. What does that say about the ideals and the value system of the United States government? All the while, and we'll come back to this later because it's a huge, huge piece of this puzzle. All the while, what's going on at home? Budgets are being slashed. Public school and public education is being whittled down to the bare bone in order for a corporate takeover to move in. The prison industrial complex is exploding. The unemployment and underemployment rates are in double digits. Look what's going on with public workers and with unions. All these things that are going on in the United States, in which the people are suffering, in which workaday folks are suffering. All right, the rate of exploitation is going up. The rate of misery, immiseration amongst the people is going up, and in large part because our government comes and tells us what? Well, we don't have the money. We're broke. We don't have the money to fund public education, right? We don't have the money to provide our citizens with any kind of services, right? Yet and still, multiple hot wars being prosecuted simultaneously. And let's just keep it to the big three for the sake of argument: Afghanistan, Iraq, and now Libya. All right, at least three hot wars going on simultaneously. Wow! And those things ain't free. Those things are not free. We'll come back to the economic picture because it's a big part of it. But multiple wars simultaneously, while the social safety net and really the fabric of society itself is being shredded here at home. So, yeah, Farrakhan spot on. This is a wicked, wicked agenda because it's a wicked, wicked country. And just look at the facts. Anyone who wants to challenge those maybe those are strong words for some people, but challenge me on that. Challenge the facts. Don't challenge me. Challenge the facts. Just look at the facts, like Mr. Farrakhan put out there. Let's look at some of the facts of history as well as the facts of right now, of today. Three hot wars, civilians dying, millions and millions being displaced, et cetera and so forth. More blood, more death, more war.
All right. With that segue, I want to play a little clip. I think you're familiar with it, and since you mentioned, put into a perspective that a lot of the engineers of this war, some of the conductors of this war, are black and brown skin faced, American born Africans such as Susan Rice, who has always beat the drums of war within the continent of Africa. She's been one of the strongest. And this really, folks, if you haven't heard of AFRICOM, this was, AFRICOM's first official, coming out party. But AFRICOM is the U.S. command in Africa. And this has been something that's been out there since, I believe, February of 2007, you know, started under the Bush regime, you know, supported by Jedediah Fraser, you know, Susan Rice, a big proponent of it, and, you know, Johnny Carson, you know, another black face, you know, under the Bush administration. And this is nothing. And most of the African nations, have totally repudiated AFRICOM having a U.S. presence, a U.S. military presence in,
right.
in various regions of the continent of Africa. That should be known. And if you go to the Department of Defense and you type in there AFRICOM, folks, you'll find and you look at the genesis of AFRICOM and you look at the wording, their wording alone, you know, to paraphrase, it says that, you know, the U.S. command in Africa secure and, you know, U.S. interests in the continent of Africa. So what are U.S. interests in the continent of Africa? Well, U.S. interests in the continent of Africa have to do with oil. They have to do with minerals, like all range of minerals, you know, magnesium, uranium, you know, cobalt, coltan, all these types of things are strategic mineral resources that the U.S. uses, you know, that the U.S. uses. I believe, you know, most of the mineral resources that come out of Africa, the U.S., like, it's close to like 50, I mean, not 50, but close to 60% in terms of the strategic mineral resources that, like, mineral resources that the U.S. use come by way of the continent of Africa. And so, you know, just get out of, you know, it's not just oil, it's not just magnesium, it's not just coltan or cobalt or uranium. It's a combination. It's a synergy of all these different minerals. And there's more. There's tungsten. You know, I mean, I could go on and on and on. But it has nothing to do with humanitarian. Folks, since 1998, the Democratic Republic of Congo has seen, you know, the worst humanitarian loss of life since World War II, where 6 million plus Congolese have been slaughtered each month. Tens of thousands of Congolese women are brutally raped by rebel forces, you know, primarily in the northeast region in Kivu. So it's very, very, very duplicitous, to say the least. And I just want to play this really quickly. And folks, this is our little musical interlude. You know, you listen to some stations, they have the musical interlude or something like that, or they have a word from our sponsors. Well, we don't have any sponsors. Our sponsors, actually, Peter, our sponsors are El Hajj Malik El Shabazz. Our sponsors are Che Guevara. Yeah, those are our sponsors. We've been inspired by their work. So we've been empowered by their work. Those are our sponsors. They're not corporate, but those are our sponsors. So from now, from a word from our sponsors, Progressive Hip Hop, here, I want you guys to listen to this, and we'll come back in a second and continue this dialogue.
Yeah. Woo! Hey, yo, Will.
What's up, Kenny?
I got a serious problem, man.
What's the problem?
Yo, after all these years of ripping shit, these suckers still try to front.
But check us out. We've been on tour with everybody, so I don't know why
everybody.
They're still fronting.
Yo, I be in every party. I be in every jam. I see their faces, and they look at me and front.
They come to every show and know we break shit up all the time.
You know what?
What?
Yo, Chris, what's your opinion?
Yo, I love the way I am, and can't nobody out here change me. Rearrange me, change me, try to game me, and don't blame me. When I grab the mic and shot the party spot, your rhymes are flip-flop. I rock hip-hop, non-stop, man, I stop rock. You can touch this, but you'll get shot. Now what's this all about? Christian humanity. In my face, you have to be on vinyl, you're mad at me. Yo, pro-blackness is your solution, but I don't really know about that song you using. Yo, too many teachers in the class spoiled the school. After a while, you got blabbering fucking fools. That person always talking about sex, that's filled. It ain't enough to study Clarence 13X. The white man ain't the devil, I promise. You wanna see the devil, take a look at Clarence Thomas. Now you're saying who? Like you were owl, throwing the towel. The devil is Colin Powell. You talk about being African and being black, Colin Powell's black. But Libya, he'll attack. Libya's in Africa.
that was just a snippet from a song by Boogie Down Productions featuring the one and only Knowledge Reigns Supreme over nearly everyone, otherwise known as KRS-One, and that was an album called Sex and Violence. Pick it up, empower your mind. That's the kind of hip-hop that needs to get out there on a mass scale. But it's very interesting. You look at that song, and obviously the song was made post, you know, because this is not the first time the U.S. has bombed Libya. You know, Libya was bombed during the Reagan administration by that devil, Ronald Reagan. That was a devil on earth. I said it. I think Peter might co-sign with me on that one as well. But, that was 1986. And, and during that bombing, you know, Muammar Gaddafi's 2 or 3 year old daughter was murdered. And that bombing was executed based on something that was since been proven to be faulty. They accused Gaddafi in Libya for the bombing of a discotheque in Europe, you know, and they also blamed blamed Libya having a connection with the downing, the bombing of the Pan Am flight over Lockerbie, Scotland. And if you listen to our last show, we got into that. We talked about the CIA connections to that and Keith Harmon Snow, you know, broke it down. So, but Peter, we get into that. I mean, you know, we were talking about the hypocrisies, and we just played something. We were putting in perspective that it's just kind of interesting that, you know, you have a bunch of brown skin faces that are part of this, and obviously a lot of ghoulish white faces as well that are part of this that represents America, and America, the face of America, Uncle Sam, is white supremacy, you know, and so the black face is just there to confuse you. But when we look at this, folks, just to get into whatever, you know, I had a show a couple weeks ago, or actually about a week ago, where I had a young man on from Baltimore City, and this is a school system in Baltimore in the state of Maryland. We know that there's a mass recession and a depression in some areas. There's a mass recession throughout America, but in some areas, they've been in a depression for quite some time. Well, you know, Maryland is slated to lose $95 million in budget cuts to education, to public education. And the city of Baltimore, which can ill afford to lose any money, they're vastly underfunded, just like so many school systems in this country. They're vastly underfunded. They're slated to lose $15 million. That is an astronomical chunk that is going to be taken out of their budget. And that means that teachers are going to be lost. That is going to mean that certain schools are going to be perhaps on the chopping block to get shut down. We look at, for instance, you know, we saw Providence, Rhode Island, you know, just about a month ago, they fired but roughly about 1,000-plus of their teachers, and they're going to be shutting down multiple schools. Same thing happened in Central Falls. And so this is something that's going on a mass scale. But I had a young man on. His name was Tavon, and he, you know, was just an unbelievable guest on the show, articulated himself on a number of issues. And the show's up there. You just, you know, just go into archive, and you can listen to the show. But we're talking about, Peter, we're talking about, and folks who are listening live or in archive right now, we're talking about the range in terms of these tomahawks that are being dropped. They cost roughly between $1 million and $1.5 million per tomahawk missile. The U.S. buys 200 tomahawk missiles, about 200 tomahawk missiles per year. All right, so that's, you know, let's say it's $1 million. This is a nice round number. That's $200 million a year. The cost of military, just the entire expenditure of military per year, is about $1.2 trillion. And the first day of this imperialist attack and war on Libya, you know, cost the U.S. over $150 million, over $150 million within the first attack. And so even Dennis Kucinich has been on record to say, and some other folks that say that if this continues, the range that we're going to be spending on this war is going to be anywhere between $500 million to $1 billion per week for this war. Between $500 million to $1 billion per week to continue to execute this war. So, and also I want to put in another context. You know, we're looking at, you know, for instance, where some of these you know, as we know, some of the ships, the F-16s and the F-15s are you know, were coming from, you know, military bases in different parts of the Mediterranean, as well as from southern Europe. Italy is where some of them took off from. But it generally costs $10,000 per hour, including maintenance, to fuel and to operate these F-16s and F-16s. These costs don't include, you know, the payloads that are being dropped from the aircraft. So we're talking $10,000, you know, per hour. Fueling and maintenance costs for these F-16s and F-16s. B-2s that have been dropped, they're 2,000-pound bombs, and they cost between $30,000 and $40,000 a piece to replace. That's $30,000 and $40,000 a piece. So you can see, that was just to give you a sketch in terms of how these numbers, if you want to know how these numbers add up. But meanwhile, we have these huge cuts in education across the board. So we have the money, and golly, you hear that, folks? That was me slapping myself in the face for using the pronoun we. The U.S. This is not me at all. The U.S. has the money to drop bombs, to take lives, all right? And let's put it off the table. Whatever your opinion is of Muammar Gaddafi, get it off the table. Don't come at us and talk about, some of the things that Gaddafi has done, within the last 40 years. I'm not here on this show to prop up the positive things that he's done, because he has done some positive things, you know, for African liberation movements and some of the negative things that he's done. I'm not here to defend or support the positive or negative. We're not even discussing that right now. We're talking about the U.S. execution of this war and its legitimacy based on humanitarian reasons. Let's look at that first and foremost. But if you nitwits want to, you know, anyone out there that wants to like defend it and say, oh, take this person out, da da da, and the other. I mean, for crying out loud, man, your argument holds no water when you continue to overlook Benjamin Netanyahu and some of these scumbags who have been at the helm of the Knesset, you know what I'm saying, in Israel, you know, Ariel Sharon, you know, and all these, you know, and Avigdor Lieberman, that pit bull demon, you know what I'm saying, who's their I believe their Secretary of Defense and is as right wing as they come. So, you know, and when we look at what these folks are doing to Palestinians, okay, and what's been going on, and you don't address that. Don't bring in the whole dialogue. You know, the U.S. had to take out Muammar Gaddafi, because when we were talking that same nonsense about Mr. I was on the CIA payroll, Saddam Hussein, taking him out in 2003. All right. And, you know, under the pretext that he had weapons of mass destruction, which he didn't. But, you know, he used to have chemical weapons, and the U.S. knew that because they sold them to him. They sold them to him for the intent purpose that he was going to use them on a whole bunch of, you know, Shia and Iran, because that was Iran at the time was definitely not an ally of the U.S. So and the U.S. helped bring him to power because they didn't like the nationalists. Qasem, who was in power before Saddam Hussein, who was a nationalist and very much wanted the oil revenues to primarily benefit the people. And that's another story. So don't bring in let's talk about the whole justification that this is a humanitarian so-called intervention. But even when you look at that, Peter, it is not, it does not hold any water when the U.S. government, you know, says, that, oh, yeah, that, well, you know, unfortunately, you know, civilians have been taken, have been taken out, but, sometimes civilians get caught in the crossfire. I mean, that's their justification. So you can take out civilians and you can spend all kinds of money, all kinds of billions of dollars, you know, to execute this kind of war on one sovereign country, all right? But when it comes to saving lives, because education literally has the power, a well-funded educational system literally has the power to save lives, and to invest in the future, so that there's no money to invest in the future in children within this country. And I'll put it out there. When you look at some of the most underfunded school systems, that they happen to warehouse mostly children of color. You know, but so I guess that there's a coincidence there as well. We want to look at that as being a coincidence when it's not a coincidence. But you look at that, and 15 of those Tomahawks that were dropped, Peter, those missiles, that amounts to the $15 million in budget cuts from education from Baltimore City alone, Peter. That's $15 million alone, and so folks, it is deplorable. And what else don't we have here? What else don't we have? We don't have universal health care. So we want to continue this stupid debate as we did last summer. This stupid debate without any kind of national dialogue, about the connection between the lack of health care. And the connection between an overbloated U.S. military. And Peter, I want you to react to this, Peter, because I'm getting a little fired up, and this is almost I need to laugh to keep from crying. But Peter, I'm not even going to tell you what this is. But Peter, I want you to comment on this on the other end. It's kind of funny, you know, but it's intended to be funny, but it's actually more real than it is funny. But we can take a little laugh at this and then look into the serious part of this. So Peter, I want you to comment on this on the other end.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the war in the Persian Gulf. Big doings in the Persian Gulf. You know my favorite part of that war? It's the first war we ever had that was on every channel plus cable. And the war got good ratings too, didn't it? Got good ratings. Well, we like war. We like war. We're a warlike people. We like war because we're good at it. And you know why we're good at it? Because we get a lot of practice. This country's only 200 years old and already we've had 10 major wars. We average a major war every 20 years in this country, so we're good at it. And it's a good thing we are. We're not very good at anything else anymore. Huh? Can't build a decent car, can't make a TV set or a VCR worth a fuck. Got no steel industry left, can't educate our young people, can't get health care to our old people, but we can bomb the shit out of your country, all right. Huh? We can bomb the shit out of your country, all right. Especially if your country is full of brown people. Oh, we like that, don't we? That's our hobby. That's our new job in the world, bombing brown people. Iraq, Panama, Grenada, Libya, you got some brown people in your country. Tell them to watch the fuck out, or we'll goddamn bomb them. Well, when's the last white people you can remember that we bombed? Can you remember the last white? Can you remember any white people we've ever bombed? The Germans, those are the only ones, and that's only because they were trying to cut in on our action. They wanted to dominate the world. Bullshit, that's our fucking job. That's our fucking job. Now we only bomb brown people. Not because they're trying to cut in on our action, just because they're brown. Now, you probably noticed I don't feel about that war the way we were told we were supposed to feel about that war, the way we were ordered and instructed by the United States government to feel about that war. You see, I tell you, my mind doesn't work that way. I got this real moron thing I do. It's called thinking. And I'm not a very good American because I like to form my own opinions. I don't just roll over when I'm told to. Sad to say, most Americans just roll over on command. Not me. I have certain rules I live by. My first rule, I don't believe anything the government tells me. Nothing. Zero. Nope. And I don't take very seriously the media or the press in this country, who in the case of the Persian Gulf War were nothing more than unpaid employees of the Department of Defense, and who most of the time function as kind of an unofficial public relations agency for the United States government. So I don't listen to them, I don't really believe in my country, and I gotta tell you folks, I don't get all choked up about yellow ribbons and American flags. I consider them to be symbols, and I leave symbols to the symbol-minded. Me, I look at war a little bit different.
Peter, what do you think about that, Peter?
You know, that's some remarks from a comedian, but they're not funny. I mean, they're funny in a tragic way, and you know, I mean, you hear the crowd roaring, okay? But those were. I mean, that's the reality. He's saying things that are spot on, realistic. They're true, and when you stop and really think about what he's saying, none of it's funny. You know, he said that at the time of that monologue, he said, you know, that the U.S. is basically in a major war every 20 years. Well, now, as I said a little earlier, today, right now, the United States is prosecuting, like I said, at least three hot wars. Now, the other one, and you know, it was really, really instructive, is the U.S. started to bomb Libya in just a matter of days from the anniversary of the invasion of Iraq back in 2003, which I think was like March 18th. And then on the March 8th, 19th or 20th of this year, the U.S. is going into Libya. And then, of course, we know about Afghanistan. That's the longest war, even longer than Iraq, longer than World War II, longer than the Civil War, longer than any conflict the United States has ever been in. Now, what we're seeing, Solomon, is a state of perpetual war. The United States is in a perpetual state of war. It's almost like, I mean, George Orwell's 1984. You know, that was an extreme exaggeration, right? Well, we're seeing it. It's true. It's come to pass. The United States is in a state of permanent war, and just like in 1984, sometimes it's just the names being changed around. We don't know who we're at war at anymore, right? But we're in a state of permanent war, and if that fact alone doesn't cause some people to wake up and question capitalism and whatever value systems might be driving this madness, then they are thoroughly brainwashed and thoroughly Westoxicated, and like George Carlin said, simply will not or cannot think for themselves. And you know, I'm right there with George Carlin on that. I'm not a very good American either, because I do like to think for myself also. I'm able to critique the United States of America. Minister Farrakhan is able to critique the United States of America, and not believe what the government tells him. Just like George Carlin was saying, you know, yeah, I don't believe what the government tells us. They lie to us all the time. Every time the government opens its mouth, they're lying. You know, and so what they do is they replace policy with symbols. You know, the ribbons and the flags that Colin mentioned, that's all this pomp and circumstance, this rah-rah bullshit, wave the flag, God bless America, you know, and all this nationalistic rhetoric, all the while, American taxpayer dollars are being spent to prosecute multiple wars on a permanent basis. It's a state of permanent war. If you understand capitalism, you understand why. Capitalism needs to always, always, always be seeking growth, be seeking more profits, be seeking more markets, be seeking more resources. And when those resources belong to other people, and they're not willing to just turn them over to the United States corporate machine, the capitalists, then the United States, on behalf of the capitalists, on behalf of the corporations, they go into that country and do several things. One is regime change. That's the language now, regime change. And then they just extract the resources. I mean, you know, there's a phenomenal book called Capitalism Underdeveloped Africa, and it explains the whole mechanism. You know, and we see these countries that are considered to be poor countries around the world. It's like, oh, those poor folks, you know, they're not civilized, or they don't have the technology. That's a lot of nonsense. They're poor because their resources have been stolen from them. They're poor because they've been exploited by the Euro-American capitalist machine over the last 500 years. And that's where we're at. And another thing Carlin said was, and this is very instructive. This is very instructive. He said, you know, that the United States doesn't manufacture anything in this country anymore. And I mean, other than what Big Macs and you know, the sandwiches and other fast food and things like that President George Bush Jr. wanted to reclassify those folks as. You know, is manufacturing, because they're putting together hamburgers, right? His administration literally wanted to do that. So, you know, we're at that point in the economy. And so let's talk about that for a minute in terms of what's going on here. Okay, obviously the war, the missiles, the bombs, the bullets, that's physical violence. That's obvious. Everybody knows that. But we need to look at a couple other forms of violence. We need to look at social violence and economic violence. I know I've talked about economic violence on this show before, and I continue to come back to it because it's so crucial to understand the nature of these capitalist wars, that it is, in fact, economic violence. And economic violence is not always accompanied by physical violence. It's not always accompanied by war. We see this so-called Great Recession, and it was global, and people all over the world were affected by it. And if we stop and carefully look at things, okay, like George Carlin suggested, that might be a good idea if we stop and think now and then, we can see the reality behind each of these conflicts, these financial crises in various countries around the world are all the same mechanisms, and all the same players are involved. We look at Greece, if we look at Ireland, and how those economies have collapsed. We see the IMF, we see the WTO, we see the Federal Reserve, we see these major corporations, we see low tax rates, we see neoliberal policies, we see all this stuff. We see what happened right here in the United States over the course of the last couple of years with the housing debacle, the mortgage debacle, all these things, this rampant rise in personal debt, family debt, you know, people being put out of their homes and these things. That is economic violence, okay? Violence is defined as intentional harm being done. And you don't need a gun or an F-15 bomber to harm people, am I right? You can harm people. You can do devastating harm, ruin an individual, ruin a family, ruin an entire community through economic violence, and not a drop of blood has been shed. And so that's what we're seeing. Let's take a look at just one example. You talked about some of the figures that are being wasted on missiles and bombs, so that the capitalists can come in on behalf. The government can come in on behalf of the capitalists and execute or prosecute another war. But if we look at just at Israel, and you probably know the figure better than I do in terms of how much aid actually goes from the United States to the state of Israel. But if we look at it very closely, Israel has more billionaires per capita than any country. Israel has more billionaires per capita than any other country. And if the state of Israel were to levy a 5% tax, a 5% tax on its billionaires. Now, a billionaire isn't going to notice 5% of his or her wealth being used, being taken away. 5% of multiple billions of dollars. If the state of Israel levied a 5% tax on its billionaires, that would entirely wipe out the need for that, the so-called need, or the professed need for those billions of dollars that the United States sends to Israel every year. So what we're seeing is the taxpayers of the United States are underwriting, they're paying for all of the war and all of the genocide and other sociocide that is being prosecuted by Israel, because Israel and the United States refuse to ask their own people, their own billionaires, the parasitic class, to pay for its own military excursions. No, American workers are paying for that, Solomon. American workers are paying for that. You know, there's another line to a song that I just love, and it hit me when George Carlin talked about the fact, the reality, that the United States just loves to bomb brown people, kill nations, or bomb nations and kill the people of these brown countries, brown skin countries. And Brother Ali says in one of his songs, in part, he says the U.S. has a $1 billion a week kill brown people habit. Think about that. It's like
right
a
on.
Crack habit. It's like
right
a crack
on.
Habit. $1 billion a week. You know, and you
yep.
mentioned, I think it was Dennis Kucinich said that at this rate, at the rate the government's going now, it's going to be between $500 million and $1 billion a week. Just for this third war, this war on Libya. So if we look at that, and then we look at the state of the condition of American citizens, the American working class, the backbone of this country, we see that is, in fact, economic violence that is being perpetrated on the people of the United States. Think about that, people. Think about your own government is perpetrating violence. Albeit economic violence, it's still violence. It's still destructive. It still kills people. People go without health care. People go without education. There are cases, Solomon, and this is, you know, folks, you can go on YouTube or wherever and look this stuff up. Go on Google and look this stuff up. There are municipalities across this country in which if someone's house is on fire, the fire department is not allowed to act to put that fire out if that homeowner hasn't paid up on all his fees and local taxes and paid whatever fees go into supporting public services like that. There are instances in which firefighters have been told by the police to stand down at the scene of a fire, of a house fire, told to stand down because that family hasn't paid whatever fees are involved. And so that is economic violence. That is, in fact, economic violence. And the thing is, it's global, Solomon. It's global. That's why we talked about this at the top of the show. Why are we so angry because of what's going on in Libya? Well, because we are in solidarity with the Libyan people. We stand arm in arm with the Libyan people and with the Palestinian people and with Afghans and Iraqis and Colombians and Venezuelans and the other folks who are the victims of the most violent nation on the planet, the greatest purveyor of violence, right, on the face of the earth, as Martin Luther King famously said. And we see that it's global. We see that working people all over the planet are being attacked by these economic policies, these rapacious policies of the capitalist class that are executed by governments on their behalf. And if we look at this great recession, so-called great recession, and there's another thing too. You know, not only was there a permanent war every 20 years, not only was there a major war every 20 years, now has evolved into a state of permanent war. But if we look at capitalism, if we study economics over time, we see since the inception of this country, there is a major financial crisis every 20 to 30 years. And in addition to that, in between those 20 and 30 year periods, there are minor problems, or what we call recessions. Okay, and so it is a fact. It is a fact that capitalism breeds economic uncertainty, as well as an obscenely disproportionate distribution of wealth and permanent war. Those are the things that capitalism breeds. And please, someone refute that if you can. Look at the facts and see what capitalism breeds. And the United States is synonymous with capitalism. It's a capitalist country through and through, inside and out. And in terms of the inequality during this what a lot of economists are calling the Great Recession over the last several years, while the unemployment and under Underemployment and unemployment rates have skyrocketed. Millions of people have lost their homes, which, by the way, is disproportionately affecting black homeowners, black families, black communities. But if we look at that period of time, we see not only are tens of millions of people being viciously attacked economically, but at the same time, Solomon, the number of billionaires increased. Yeah, you heard me right. During the Great Recession, when people were losing their pensions, when people's bank accounts were being wiped out, when people's homes were underwater, and their furniture was being repoed, billionaires were increasing in number. So what does that tell you? What does that tell you? And we also know, it's been made plain that the corporations, the leading corporations in this country, have been sitting on over $1 trillion in cash reserves, sitting on it. So if these facts don't fly in the face of the narrative of capitalism, the narrative of the free market, then you're just being blind. You're just being blind if you don't see that, if you don't see these facts. And so, George Carlin, you know, he's a great comedian, but he's also a very, very insightful critic because he thinks for himself. And you know, in terms of not manufacturing anything in this country, we look at the financialization of our economy. And folks, if you're not familiar with that concept, if you're not familiar with that language in terms of financialization, you need to look it up. You need to do your research and understand what is really going on in this economy, why things are so bad for most of us and yet so good for so few of us or so few of them, the ruling class. We need to do your research and find out what financialization means. Find out what FIRE means. FIRE. That's the financialization of an acronym used for the financialization of our economy. In other words, yeah, we're not manufacturing anything in this country anymore. Why? Because it's not profitable to the capitalist class. It's more profitable now, particularly because of all these neoliberal policies that the government is creating. But it's because the capitalist class has now turned to these financial means of generating more wealth, speculation, hedge funds, credit default swaps, all these crazy, insane financial mechanisms that are designed for one thing and one thing only, to make more profit for the already wealthy. And so the capitalists don't have to manufacture anything in this class. That's what people don't understand. You know, all this talk about creating jobs, everybody that runs for office is going to talk about creating jobs. It's not going to happen because the capitalist class, the corporations, the CEOs, they don't need to create jobs anymore. They don't need people working for them to generate more wealth, or at least people working for them in this country, because we look at where they're sending their plants and their factories to, where they are manufacturing stuff is in other countries, so they can exploit, well, brown people. Let's just say it. They can exploit brown people, and then they can come over here and sell their crap to the unemployed Americans who have been put out of work by their policies. And it is global, Solomon. It's global. We need to understand that this is economic violence going on. So while there's a war being perpetrated in Afghanistan and in Iraq and in Libya, there's also being a war perpetrated in other countries. One of the most recent, probably the most recent glaring example of an economic collapse is Ireland. And Ireland was the darling of European economics for about 10 years there in the late 90s to about 2007 until the recession hit. And we see the same players, we see the same principles and the same policies in action that devastated the nation of Ireland, the tiny nation of Ireland, the same kind of things that devastated the nation of Greece just a few months prior, also over the course of the past several years. So we are seeing violence, Solomon, on a global scale in many forms. We're seeing it take shape in many forms. And you know, even guys like George Carlin are talking about it. Just stop and think. You know, he's not a rocket scientist. It's not Albert Einstein. He's not an economist. He's a comedian, for crying out loud. So all of us can see the things that are going on if we choose to look. If we choose to look, and we're not afraid of seeing what's out there. All right. I also know that's the case. That a lot of Americans are so in love with their ribbons and their flags and their God bless America rhetoric that they refuse to even acknowledge that there is something there's some demons in the closet. There's some monsters under the bed, so to speak. They're completely delusional, which by definition is just a willful ignorance, you know. And so we see that, and we don't see critical thinking. We don't see people engaging with politics. We don't see people engaging with ideas that matter, like issues of economics, like things like global trade. What is all this globalism? What does this stuff have to do with me? Has everything to do with you. Has everything to do with you and with me, and everything to do with the connection between what's going on here in the United States to what's going on in Libya. And these other countries. So I wanted to make that very, very clear that we are seeing vividly in front of our eyes economic violence being perpetrated at different levels all over the planet. All right, and it's the same players over and over and over again. Because who's going to line up? Who's going to line up to get those natural resources in Libya? Well, we know the answer to that question, Solomon, because if we go back to was it 2004, I think, when the sanctions on Libya were lifted, right? That's because there were several major corporations. They went in and they formed, the U.S. Libya Business Association. That's not its exact name, but it's close enough. And what they did was they said, hey, there's resources in here, so they pressured Libya to get on board with this so-called war on terror, right? So we know who those corporations are. We know who did that. We know who wanted in and who pushed the federal government to lift those sanctions so that those corporations could go in there and start to exploit the mineral and raw material wealth of that North African nation. And we can also look over to Iraq and over to Afghanistan and see the corporations that have lined up and are now extracting all kinds of wealth from those two countries. So we know who the players are now. We can name names, you know. We don't have to talk in nebulous and amorphous language like, well, you know, they're doing something. You know, well, you know what they do. You know, it's not the they anymore. We can name names. We can say that it's Halliburton. We can say that it's Bechtel. We can say that it's the Carlyle Group. We know who it is. Am I right?
Right.
We know who these players are now. And so when we can see who they are and see what they're doing, and yet and still, in the face of all that evidence and all that reality, turn a blind eye and say, God bless America and support the troops, something is seriously wrong. Something is seriously wrong, Solomon, when folks can look at those facts and understand that America does have a $1 billion-a-week kill brown people habit, that we're stuck in a state of permanent warfare, that our economy is stuck in the toilet for permanently, that underemployment and unemployment double digits is going to be a permanent feature of the U.S. economy. Let's just wake up. Let's just wake up and call it what it is, you know. And that's the bigger picture. And what's going on in Libya plays a central role in this larger picture, the economic violence, the social violence. When I say social violence, I mean the shredding of the social safety net. Look what's going on in Wisconsin and Ohio and Michigan, attacking workers' rights, attacking unions. The teachers, all the teachers' unions are being attacked. That's one of the main forces behind the drive for privatization, right? Is to bust the teachers' unions. So we're seeing a social violence taking place. We're seeing economic violence taking place, and of course, we're seeing physical violence taking place. You know, George Collin even mentioned, oh, you can turn on the TV, and you know, what was it, the war in Iraq back in the early '90s was, I mean, you know, it was live and in color, right? You know.
Yeah.
The revolution may not be televised, but the war is going to be televised, right? I mean, it is a sick state of affairs, and all I can do is agree with Minister Farrakhan on this point, that America has a wicked, wicked agenda.
Right, and it's important, you know, folks, that I keep reiterating that, you know, please, I mean, it's important that you pass, you know, these messages along, you know. And I know some folks, you know, are listening, and this is kind of preaching to the choir, but, you know, I guess, you know, that, you know, there is a significance of having a choir. but you know, we all know some people that need to broaden their horizons in terms of thinking out the box critically about these very, very serious geopolitical issues that are inextricably connected to us, because and oftentimes these geopolitical issues, you know, emanate from within these stolen borders, otherwise known as the United, you know, States of America, or as some folks say, the United Snakes of America. It's vastly important that we understand how connected we are to them, and how our, you know, our unknowing of how these issues, as Pierre just laying out, like how these issues really perpetuate themselves, how they manifest themselves, you know, where the genesis is of from many of these issues. If we continue to just perpetually unknow, we just continue to just not know what the hell is going on. The consequences are very, very grave, you know, to say the least. You know, we're talking about economic violence, is what Peter says. We're talking about real violence that we see right now, and you know, I mean, the U.S. is involved in three major wars right now. All right, I mean, you could even say a fourth. If we could say Iraq, because the U.S. combat troops are still there in Iraq. I hope folks know that combat troops are still in Iraq. They've been bombing Pakistan as well as Afghanistan. All right, those are two different countries, you know, a third with Iraq, and then we look at and then we take a long hard look at Libya. You know, that's four. That's four different countries that the U.S. Is covertly, I mean, not covertly, but overtly, you know, prosecuting, you know, deadly strikes right now, and that's what we know overtly, you know, covertly. The fact that the U.S., you know, through the CIA, is probably in Yemen right now and doing some, you know, dastardly things. You know, as long as we continue to not know and not to critically engage ourselves, you play to the hands. We all play to the hands of the corporate masters that really are the ones that truly are connected, you know what I'm saying, to Capitol Hill. You can't take one from the other. Capitol Hill and Wall Street are inextricably connected. You know, especially looking at the Citizens United case and the money that continues to pump day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year into Capitol Hill. It's so connected, all right? And they serve them, you know. Many of your elected officials, not all, but many of your elected officials serve their Wall Street masters very, very well. And that's why they vote certain ways. And that's why they don't always vote in the best interests of their constituents, but, you know, because their true base and their true power and their true ability to run campaign after campaign comes from where? Comes from where? Comes from the money that they get from Wall Street, from the Koch brothers, from, you know what I'm saying? And it's not just the Koch brothers. There's so many others out there. I mean, you know, when you look at the how much money was flown in through lobbyists, you know, during the whole so-called, you know, healthcare, you know, debate, you know, last year, and how that impacted, you know, we go from talks of single payer system to a public option, and then that gets watered down to a further concession that is some, you know, some just, you know, this fancy, you know, piece of shit that's dressed up as a syrupy delight, but it really it's just it's just, you know, melted shit, you know, and people like, you know, think this is something great. I mean, yeah, there are certain provisions that are improvements, but overall, it's not anything close to universal health care. And right. and in the same token, one of the most dastardly things about it is that we have to continue to finance a corrupt health insurance, you know, system, a health insurance system. They're the ones that made out the bandwidth because they inherited, you know, 30 million new customers, you know, that can be spread out. They can be spread out, you know, over, you know, from Cigna to Blue Cross Blue Shield to United, you know, it can go on and on, you know, and they're spread out the same, the way that the wealth in this country should be spread out, you know, from community to community. But we don't see the wealth. We see a concentration. And we know, you know, that, you know, we have this small, you know, even like Michael Moore was talking about this. And you look in between the numbers, which I did, and he was right on. You have about 400 plus, about 400 and some change U.S. citizens that control more wealth than 50% of all Americans. So there's 400 Americans that control more wealth than about 155, 156 million Americans. I mean, if that seems fair, if that seems like the capitalist dream and the American dream, then I'm living a nightmare because that's not a dream to me, and it's not a dream to a lot of the folks. But some other folks, they see this thing, Peter, as this dream. It's a mirage. It's almost like you're in the desert. And Peter, you know this. I mean, you live in the desert. You talk about walking, you know, and that hot sun, for a long time. But imagine you're walking in that hot sun, 115 degree weather, in the middle of the desert, and you're just walking, and you know, what do you, you know, as you start to hallucinate, you start to see this mirage in the distance, and it looks like an oasis of water, you know what I'm saying, like fresh, cold, chilly water you can just jump in and then just cool yourself off. But that's what a lot of American, millions of Americans believe based around this whole capitalist, this capitalist system. And they believe that if they work hard enough, they can really arrive. And the examples that the media and the folks like to hold up are these folks who went from rags to riches and they struck pay dirt. But there are literally tens of millions of Americans who are busting their ass just to make ends meet. 77% of all working Americans are living check to check. And people are busting their ass. The system, the capitalist system and structure in this country is not built to sustain, you know, that many people to make it. It's not. It's a system that is based on exploitation. And so there have to be, you know what I'm saying, it's a system where they simply have to have a few. And I don't want to, you know, I don't want to go off on a tangent, but you know what I'm saying? But it's built on having relatively few masters and having a huge working class that is methodically undereducated so that those folks can work those menial jobs and work that minimum wage, not with a livable wage, but a minimum wage where they have to go and they work 8 hours and they come home and take a short nap and then go work, you know, the night shift at the next job and do this day in and day out, toiling day in and day out, while these other fat cats are laying back on their yachts in Saint-Tropez or somewhere in the Caribbean, and they're laying back on their yachts, and they haven't lifted a damn finger. And many of them, not all, but many of them have not lifted a damn finger for any manual kind of labor, any shape, form, or fashion, because the bulk of their money comes from capital gains. And they're being taxed 15%, where the working class person that I just described, the working class person is, okay, they're being taxed 35%, 33%, 32%. Does that, but you've got to get out of this illusion, because when you get out of this illusion, when things that like Farrakhan says, they make too much sense, and you start to see the fix is in, as they say, The game is in. The fix is in. The fix is in, Peter. When you start to take it off and you start to think, you're like, damn. Yo, he makes a good point because and for those folks that never heard of the Move 9, you know, the Move House, all right, in Philadelphia. This is a house where there was a house full of black folks, all right, and they weren't down. Look it up. Just look it up. Look up Move. Just type in Google Move House Bombed, Philadelphia. Just type it, and you'll get tons of articles. All right, look it up, all right? But they bombed this house, all right? They bombed this house. They didn't try to talk these people out of the house. These were black folks that were not down with this white supremacist system in America, all right? They lived collectively. You know what I'm saying? Yes, they're radical, but what does radical mean? What does radical mean? What does radical mean? Radical in that kind of system means that, you're going to do things that, you know what I'm saying, to subvert this oppressive system, you know, living communally, bucking the system, not embracing, white supremacist, lessons in schools and this, that, and the other. But look, there's so much history to be told of, Ramona Africa and Pam Africa, who's still alive. But look at what they did. They bombed that house, as he said. They didn't try to talk about it. They're even looking at the Branch Davidians, you know what I'm saying, in Waco, Texas. All right? There were kids that were burned to a crisp. Were burned to a crisp. I believe it was Janet Reno that just went in there and just, yo, boom. They didn't talk them out. So, like, what if, Peter, so I ask this question, Peter. What if Slovenia or what if Libya or what if some other country, what if Venezuela said, during that time, say, what? You guys are bombing your own citizens. You're killing innocent civilians. You're killing civilians. You're killing, or they say they describe the move house as a house of rebels. You're bombing these rebels. Or how about the execution of Black Panthers? You could describe them as rebels. Yeah, the execution of likes of Fred Hampton and Mark Clark. And Peter, what if they said, "Oh, we want to execute a no-fly zone over America, over Chicago, over Philadelphia, or over Waco, Texas. We want to execute a no-fly zone." And then they said, "All right, we're going to go in there and drop some bomb. We're going to, drop some." Hell no, the U.S. ain't having that. But here's the thing, folks, because we don't think about these things in this context, because we've been trained to think very literally. We've been trained to think in that manufactured box, that little itty bitty manufactured box that I don't really know. I've been living in my entire life, so I don't really know how small it is, but I'm living in this manufactured box, and I can't think outside of it. So therefore, I'm not going to think of the obvious. I'm not going to think of these things that would outline complete hypocrisy, because if you're for justice across the board. But if you say you're for justice and you're executing this kind of death and destruction against your own citizens, your own black and brown citizens in places like Miami, where we see that we've had 7 black men who have been killed in the last 7 months, or we see in Detroit where Ayanna Stanley Jones was killed by a police officer, or Oscar Grant or Sean Bell, they were killed by police officers. If you're executing this same kind of state-sanctioned violence against your own citizens, and then you're also carrying it out against innocent civilians by the tune of about 1 million Iraqi civilians, and also we see this case, Peter, where these American soldiers, were in Afghanistan, and they went right. on a murder spree, and not shooting at the Taliban, but they were caught. They were caught in a murderous spree. They were going into and killing like completely innocent civilians, and then taking their pictures, having their buddies take pictures of these slain Afghani civilians, taking pictures of them. And the only reason why this story broke is because Der Spiegel, which is one of the major newspapers in Germany, broke the story. And the pictures got out, and broke the story. And that's the only reason, people, why they just handed out the first court-martial were one of the young men who admitted it, one of the scumbags that admitted it, you know what I'm saying, what he did, because he was caught, you know, in one of the pictures. He just got, today, 25 years. 25 years, I mean, and when he gets out, he'll probably be in his 50s, have the rest of his life. But yet, those slain, you know, families that they cut down, they friggin' slaughtered, and then took pictures of these civilians, they'll never come back. they'll never come back. They'll never come back. And this is justice, I tell you. This is justice, I tell you, right? They'll never come back, and this son of a bitch gets 25 years. That's a life sentence. And I say that because this is, once again, across the board, when we look at the death penalty in this country, where the poor and the brown and black skin are the ones who stand the best chance of getting the death penalty, the death penalty. Damn it. Folks, wake the hell up. Wake the hell up, all right? Wake the hell up. Have these conversations with your family and friends. I don't care how tough it is, how tough you think it is for somebody to lose their life at the hands of some rogue, you know what I'm saying, G.I. Joe, you know, who just is just going in there and they're playing this game. And he described it such. It was a game. I'm not making this up. He described it as such. It was a game. They said it was a game. The game was to go and they killed civilians and they, you know what I'm saying? And then they took pictures with the dead civilians. The sick game. Are you kidding? Are you kidding me? You name somebody, anybody in this country that is poor or black or brown that does that, goes into a house in Minnesota, Washington, and goes and kills like a white family or this, that, and the other. Are you kidding me? What? You think they're going to get 25 years? If the death penalty is applicable in that state, they're getting that. And if not, they're never going to see the light of day again. Again. Come on. And you reward him because he admitted it? He had no choice to admit it. The picture showed he was doing it. Come on. Wake up, people. Wake up. These kind of things, it starts with a critical mass, and it starts with citizens and Americans. It starts right here in the U.S. of A., where you have Americans that have to demand justice. They have to demand an end to these airstrikes. They have to get out in the streets, Peter. They have to get out in the streets, not just in Wisconsin, but they have to get out in the streets in every major city, and they have to get out in the street in force, and they have to stay out in the streets. And they have to stay out in the streets and demand justice. And, you know what I'm saying? And if it means finally, you know, getting arrested for civil disobedience, then that's a sacrifice that's made. But they have to get out in the streets and demand justice. Justice in their name and justice for people throughout the globe and justice economically. Economically. You know?
You know, you mentioned, the situation with prison, and there's another reality that is very, very stark and very, very sobering that ought to be alarming to everyone. One out of three black males born in the 21st century, it is being speculated that one out of three black males born in the 21st century will be incarcerated in prison at some point in his life. One out of three, Solomon. One out of every three black boys born in the 21st century will serve prison time at some point in his life. Now that is a structural obscenity. And it's all linked to everything else we were talking about tonight. These are all linked together. We can't, you know, these are inextricably linked phenomenon and events. That's part of the social suicide that I was talking about. I'm sorry, that's the social violence that I was talking about, where one in three black boys is basically doomed to spend time in prison unless things change drastically. And that's largely, if not entirely, because of the state of the economy in this country. Again, capitalism and the fact that there is an entire industry that benefits by incarcerating people, non-white peoples. This is the wicked agenda and the wickedness of the current economic and socioeconomic system in this country, and the reality of permanent war, the reality of permanent war itself ought to be enough to wake up everybody, and snap everybody out of their stupor and out of their happy-go-lucky perspective of, you know, God bless America, and so on and so forth. And the language of the UN resolution, Solomon, specifically has to do with intervention on behalf of the civilians of Libya, right? It does not speak on the regime change in Libya. So it's not allowed to do that. It condemns that, essentially, by not including it. That's not what the resolution is about. That's not what the international community has agreed to. But yet and still, what do we hear? The leadership of the United States, as well as some of the other Western nations, particularly France, is particularly aggressive about replacing Gaddafi. And so we see the wicked nature of what the United States is doing in terms of how it chooses to violate international law along the way, how it chooses to do whatever the hell it wants to do, and treats other nations as well as its own citizens with total indifference and with total barbarism. And so that's how we need to understand this going forward, Solomon. And as we draw to a close, I just want to reiterate for our listeners that when we look structurally at it, when we look globally at it, and we look at the broader context, we see in the very nature of the capitalist, American capitalist system, violence at its very core, And just to quote Mr. Farrakhan again, it's a wicked, wicked agenda.
Or I should say, I have nothing else to say. I think this song is most apropos to take us out. And, you'll see us again. We'll, same black time, same black channel. Or does that mean same bad time, same bad channel? I guess that was a slip of the tongue. But anyways, for more radical and progressive talk and insights, continue to tune into Your World News, not just our radio, but also we're doing some really strong things with our visual outlet. You can just go to www.yourworldnews.blip.tv. So yourworldnews.blip.tv. And, there's more to come. So without further ado, I think this song sums up much of what we were talking about. We'll see you next time.
Brother, one GP Wonder. Listen, we're all a part of the bigger plan. You wanna stand by yourself or take a stand? Shit, I guess we all have been misled, cause what they say might just fuck with your head. Now the word is out in 91,000 documents, so I don't need to speak the truth about the government. The results are secondary evil, and their orders that kill innocent people. Rapid machine gun fire spit, Apache chopper hit and keep on shooting. I call them killers in the cockpit. The world's sick, we all have to admit we aim to kill and shoot. With a trigger itch, we're going down. I can see people dying. Can't you see all the bodies multiplying? Can't you hear the women and children crying. Are you blind, motherfucker? Can't you see we need to wake up? Like Rage Against the Machine, cause this is not a fantasy, this is not a dream, this is a reality, this is what we see. And if you think you're free, I beg to disagree. I guess we're sleeping with our minds closed, eyes shut, cold inside and afraid to wake up. We walk around like zombies left for dead, and when we speak our mind, they shoot us in the head. I guess we're stupid and easy to trick. We go to war for our freedom when it's all politics. So we walk around like zombies left for dead. Let me speak my mind and catch a bullet in my head. A rhyming God speaking. You need to wake up, no Tylenol, PM. The revolution, a better solution. Restitution, retribution, Texas shooting. Death is ruin, better music than your generation. Sinners, hatred, litigation. Kill the nation, winners, patrons. The displacement, wicked sensation. The tempest was timid when he entered the oasis. I have met with the oracle, speech was rhetorical. In the morning, they are mourning you, it is honorable. So when you fight for what you believe, you are remembered by a mark on the sleeve. The funeral parlor, consuming the horror, we move for tomorrow. And usually proper, consuming your offer to the tomb where they brought us. You can't kill a thought, you can't kill an idea. You can shoot me in the head, but can't kill my mind either. The rhyme seeker, divine speaker, time reacher, line preacher, designed to seek ya. Follow us down the path of the righteous. If you don't like us, from darkness to where light is. I guess we're sleeping with our minds closed, eyes shut, cold inside and afraid to wake up. We walk around like zombies left for dead, and when we speak our mind, they shoot us in the head. I guess we're stupid and easy to trick. We go to war for our freedom when it's all politics. So we walk around like zombies left for dead. Let me speak my mind and catch a